Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the third quarter wrap-up equity overview. I'm in Pennsylvania, and I'm joined by Tim Caban, who is now doing our equity overviews, and we're thrilled that you're joining me.
I'm thrilled to be back, and thanks for having me.
Tim manages, leads the Copper Beach Advisors here in Malvern, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And I was saying I was on this morning talking to a colleague, and I said, I'm so looking forward to talking with Tim because he's both highly grounded and very coherent.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Okay, so you're a financial planner and you're a fee-only financial planner, and you have lots of clients, so you're not looking to take on more clients. And I have found, the remarkable thing about you is, first of all, you have a pretty good map of how the world really works. You don't dwell on the negative, but you're very focused on helping people manage through the environment, not just in their financial assets, but in all of their assets and in their life. So you know how to optimize between real assets and financial assets because you're doing it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
It starts with me, with my own family, and then just expands to apply that to other people.
Right. And one of the things we always say on the equity overview, but I want to stress it again because you can't hear it enough. When you look at the complexity of optimizing across all asset classes, real assets, your time, your family, your risk issues, it's very complicated. It's not simple. And that's why every person is different. And I would find when I was doing investment advisory, the advice I would give one person in the morning was opposite of what I would tell another person.
Yeah.
Because everybody's different. And that's why, both because you're unique and it's complicated, I think in this environment, each person who can has to take the time to make their own choices. They have to understand the risks and opportunities. They have to make their own choices.
And take responsibility to make
Right.
those. That's the
Right.
first step, I think. Yeah.
Right. The first step through turtling through is taking responsibility. It's my problem. I'm going to.
Yes, right.
Right. And anyway, I know as a financial planner, when you get a client who will take responsibility, it's a joy.
It is, and then they can make rapid progress because
Right.
they just don't have the information. If you give somebody information that has taken responsibility, they can make tremendous progress.
Right. Right. And I also want to say, because I say this again, what I find one of the keys to making that progress is if it's a family. If you can get a man and woman working together, it's much better than if you leave it to one spouse.
Absolutely.
Right.
And that's true financially and otherwise working together.
Right.
When you don't work together, it's just such a drag on progress.
I had a wonderful colleague. You're going to laugh. We were in a meeting, and finally, one guy turned to the rest of the team and he said, "Don't you understand that the absence of teamwork is a cash flow problem?"
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the first things I say to young people, they say, I'm getting married. They say, consider setting up a joint bank account.
Right.
You're coming into it with separate things, but start to get on the same page. You don't have to go wholesale that way,
Right.
but start to communicate about money because it is a cash flow.
So my church in Washington would not marry anybody unless they took a course on that included financial management on what marriage really meant in terms of sharing decision-making responsibility for different financial and time and other issues.
Yeah, that's smart.
And they just said, you got through all the practical stuff or we won't marry you.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so what I want to do today, I love the British poster, keep calm and carry on.
Okay, yeah.
And I'm finding that the environment lends itself to causing people to leave a state of coherence and get incoherent and get emotional. And a lot of the questions that we get about money revisit basic issues. And what it tells me is too many people are being put in fear on financial issues. And so I want to go back to the basics and walk through the asset classes and then also what the news is in the macro environment that affects our money. And so it's sort of a back to basics. And as I go, I'm going to address a lot of the questions that we get. So this is going to be a back to basics kind of thing. So let's start with before I start, any questions or comments?
No, just one observation that I think you said to me just earlier that starting with the idea that there's no getting away. Because if you start with that mindset that you can't run, you can't hide, you need to think about how can I operate where I am? Yes, sure, there's better jurisdictions, there's not jurisdiction. But at some point, you have to operate. You can't just keep looking to get away from it.
Right.
And if you change that mindset, then that changes how you think about all these other things.
It's funny. I went back many years ago and I studied the entire history of my family as far back as I could go. And what I realized is they've been trying to get away. Yeah. You know, they keep moving west to get away. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if you look as an investment advisor, everybody was trying to get away to Switzerland or get away to the Cook Islands or get away.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the reality. There is no away.
Yeah. And that might have been more possible years ago. Yeah. Today's interconnected world and technology and things, it becomes less and less possible.
Well, if you look at the people running the central control grid, it's global.
Yes.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so with that, let's dive in. Cash and currency.
Mm-hmm.
Big, big questions, of course, about the dollar and the future of the dollar. I don't know if you saw the headline. Janet Yellen just said we could afford two wars.
It's great. It's crazy. Like what world does she live in? Is it just, it almost seems like people are making statements that they have to know there's a problem with, but they just have to give the party line. I don't know why somebody makes a statement like that. Or they just have confidence that they can accomplish what they think.
The dollar is shooting up, one of the reasons the dollar is shooting up is you have people around the world in a debt trap, but they're selling treasuries to get the dollars they need to pay their debt. Mm. And what that means is, you know, there was a paper at Jackson Hole, I don't know if you saw John and I talking about it, where the Fed is talking about the primary dealers can't handle the volume in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whether it's the U.S. are selling or sales in the secondary market, and they're proposing to take the inventory into the Fed. So yeah, we're talking about monetization.
And that's what's called monetization, yeah.
Of the entire deficit. Mm-hmm. So this is part of what people are feeling in terms of inflation. Mm-hmm. So the question is, we all need cash, you know, but it means if I'm holding cash and inflation is serious, mm-hmm, this is why I always say toilet paper is the poor man's treasury bills.
And that was true during COVID. The double benefit.
Well, but you know, my attitude was always whatever storage space I have for anything I'm going to need, I'd mm-hmm rather have it sitting in paper towels than,
yeah, you know, because the price now is cheaper than the price later.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, but cash and currency right now is tricky. I told you in Israel, I was looking yesterday at the shekel; it was down 11% in one day. Can you imagine trying to get money out?
That's significant, yeah.
Yeah. So if you're in Israel now, reports from Jerusalem indicate it's very hard to keep a business going. So your income's down. Mm-hmm. And now against the dollar, I mean, imagine what the cost of imports is going to do.
Yeah.
And
you're trying to deal with a money changer who is trying to give you a rate, but the rate is going like this.
Right.
And the money changer doesn't want to lose money. So there's right, challenges there.
Right. So it's important to remember that currency, you know, any currency can rise and fall in price. It's volatile.
That's why I think a basic thing is to try. And now that's a tough situation in Israel when you have to leave. But in every other situation, match the currency to your jurisdiction.
Right.
Don't operate in Swiss francs when you live in America.
Right.
And then you're less subject to the ups and downs of the currency market.
So I will say this. I like to have a cash stash.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to have a cash stash. You know, I have cash parked all over the place because I travel a lot. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind losing value in mm-hmm inflation, because to me, liquidity is worth whatever I pay in terms of, right. So, and of course, you know, I like spending cash.
Yes. And then that helps to hold off the control forces by using cash as opposed to electronic.
Right. Well, it's funny. I don't know if you just saw Katie Hopkins did a new video about a month ago, and cash use in the UK is up 7%.
Okay. People aren't stupid. They start to realize.
Well, both in the United States and Europe, when I'm traveling, what I see is small business people and entrepreneurs, you know, they know.
Yes.
And they're using cash.
Yep.
Right. Okay, let's talk about bank deposits. If you look at the Fed taking interest rates and interest rates rising tremendously, so we pump out all the money in the pandemic. Then suddenly we go from a world of cheap capital to capital now really costs money. And that's a world of hurt for a lot of banks.
Yeah.
Because they've got loan portfolios at low rates. Now rates are high. If they can turn them over, that's fine. But their investment portfolios are down. Mm-hmm. So every bank more or less is in a squeeze.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they're trying to pay less on deposits because then they keep more of the spread.
Right.
And then people are trying to earn more. So there's that tension between somebody who deposits money in the bank and is trying to earn a high rate, the bank who wants to pay a low rate to keep more of the spread.
Okay, so I keep sitting down with people who are banking in banks who are known for throwing people out with no notice.
Yes, and to me, it's always, when I have the conversation with people, it's related to inertia. Oh, I have all my accounts there. Oh, it's a pain in the neck. Don't do it wholesale. Just start, open a little account at a local bank and just get started.
Get to know them.
Yeah. Yes.
So part of the conversation I'm having is I try to tell them, go meet with them. Mm-hmm. This is a relationship and it's an important relationship. Mm-hmm. They need to know you. They really need to know you. And if you look at all the things a bank does for you, the more they know you, the more they can protect you.
Yeah, because when something happens, something odd, or they get a request that says freeze Tim's account, call up and say, hey, Kathy, this is a problem. This is not right.
Right.
And I already know her. And then we can have a conversation. It's not a faceless bureaucracy that you can't interact with.
Right. So, but we've grown up believing, oh, we just go online and open an account and you don't have to meet anybody and it shouldn't take any time.
Yeah.
And I'm running into tremendous resistance of, well, I didn't have time to go meet, you know. And I'm sympathetic because people's time is under terrible pressure.
Yeah.
But this is a very important relationship. And if they know you, and if you can take the time to build trust, then that can protect you in all sorts of crazy situations.
Yeah. And putting in the legwork now to get to know people, you may not realize when that's going to benefit you later, but it's like, if you don't do the work now, you're not going to be protected later. If you do it now, then at least you're protected to some degree that you may not be able to foresee.
Right. So I told you my story of, I paid 2 CPAs to do my taxes 1 year because if the new guy coming on would do it the same year parallel with the old guy leaving, then I would be, you know, then I would make sure I could satisfy myself that the transition had been successful. Well, the old guy had to pull out faster than we expected. But suddenly the new guy had to do it. Thank God.
Yeah.
So, but it was redundancy.
Yeah.
Well, Carolyn and I just did a 4-part series on financial rebellion that is published at Solari on how to build a successful relationship with the bank. And it took 4 episodes, and we go into detail. Only a really good attorney could come up with this level of detail. I could never level of detail. But we went through every question you could possibly imagine, and it's there if anybody wants
Great.
It. Okay. One of the concerns I have is, I think if you look, you know, certainly in Europe and less in the United States, the regulators have set up to do bailouts. And if you look at what happened with the SVB workout, some of these other workouts, my real concern is the powers that be are going to run banks. And they've got fast payment systems now to help them do it.
Yeah.
So if you look at what happened during the 20s and 30s and how many banks, you know, you had insiders and outsiders, and they went after the outsider banks. And that's why, you know, when I see people banking with banks that don't care about them.
Yeah.
It really.
But the answer to that is know your banker.
Yes.
That's how, that's what you should do about that. When you're concerned about bail-ins or taking over the banking system.
Right.
The action item for a local person is to know the local banker. Your local bank, who knows how outside they are. or what the priority is for outsiders being targeted, but at least you can work together with them.
Well, I'm assuming in this environment, everybody's an outsider.
Yeah.
Even the guys who think they're insiders. Mm-hmm. And that's why you really care that they're well capitalized and well managed. So you don't just want a local bank, you want a great bank.
Yes.
Right. So, and people say, well, I'm not competent to do due diligence. Well, you have a, you know, you have a friend who is competent, or mm-hmm. You have a CPA,
or work together with people,
or you have a financial planner, you have somebody, right, get together and do it together.
Mm-hmm.
So just make sure it's a good bank and make sure you have a relationship. And when folks start running banks, don't go into a panic.
Yeah.
So during the SVB, you know, it was sending people into panic and they were doing the wrong things.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Real estate. Real estate is a tricky one because I keep saying get into real assets.
Yeah.
But real estate in the wrong jurisdiction is a nightmare.
Yeah. And real estate is easy to buy and can be harder to sell.
Right.
And you do want to look, it's very low. The old saying, real estate is local, and you have to know the local area of where you're buying.
Right.
Which is especially important when people are trying to locate to a new jurisdiction.
Right.
The world's going crazy. I'm moving to Tennessee. Well, do you know anything about the local, which neighborhood?
Right.
So go and get to know it first. But
right. If you're in the wrong county, it's terrible.
Yeah.
Right. Right. It takes a lot of due diligence. That's what I find. Real estate takes an enormous amount of due diligence. And what I'm always saying to people, you know, all these things take enormous due diligence. What I'm always saying to people is take a deep breath and realize you're taking on a major job to make sure your assets are properly managed. You have to do the due diligence. You have to practice informed consent over your money. And, you know, I've become much more patient than I was when I was on Wall Street
mm-hmm.
because you could just assume things were right and move fast.
Yeah.
And I didn't, you know, in 1990, it was inconceivable to me the extent of due diligence I had to do now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it used to be a lot more used to be relied upon.
So I'm really worried about the climate change games as they will hit.
Mm-hmm.
As they will hit real estate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I do think there's tremendous difference in jurisdictions.
Yeah.
Not just county level, but state level.
Yeah, because it's totally based on the response to the so-called climate change problem.
Right.
I thought that interview you did with Charles was tremendous. And talking with somebody, with people who are in regenerative agriculture and telling them that his perspective at the high level was that the number one thing you can do, regardless of your view, whether right. you believe climate change or not, for the benefit of the world, is do regenerative agriculture.
Yeah.
Get away from industrial farming.
Right.
That has so many different layers of benefits.
Yeah, including safety, because then you're not eating poison.
Yes. Yeah. I was amazed to hear him say that was the number one thing that would impact his systemic view.
Right. So he said the number one thing is changing the governance system, but that's
harder. Okay, maybe I missed, maybe it was number two.
No. But the number two is switch from industrial to regenerative agriculture. And that is something each one of us can individually do and do it in a way which is good for our money and good for our health.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it was funny to see, you know, because he spent a lifetime trying to figure out the same time the rest of us are trying to figure out.
Yeah.
So he came at it totally from the perspective of energy. But we arrived in almost the same place.
Yes.
It's remarkable.
Yeah. You know? All roads lead to the same.
Yeah.
Same.
Thing. Yeah. That's how, although I call it Mr. Global, he calls it the rackets.
Yes. I like that. The rackets.
Anyway. Okay. There is an effort. The amount of institutional money around the country that's buying up real estate is frightening.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's astonishing.
Yeah.
So somebody's trying to get major amounts of sort of pandemic injected cash into real estate. Are you seeing any of that?
I don't know. I hear the statements like Vanguard and BlackRock are buying all this real estate. And I think it's important to remember that really when that statement is made, it's the individual investors who give their money to Vanguard or
right.
BlackRock. I see it in some of these, there's a lot of empty commercial real estate, office buildings.
Right.
There's a lot of, at least in this area, there's a lot of condos and apartments being built that are being built even just to rent. because, and to me, that's some of the bigger owners that are putting, and it's kind of putting a square peg in a round hole in my view. Right. There's always the NIMBY. There's always the "you're ruining my community" view, but it's almost like an overwhelming pressure of development.
They need yield generating securities.
Yeah,
that's what it is. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Well, it is true that there's real trouble in the commercial market because you've got all sorts of folks. So, you know, go back to the interest rates. Mm-hmm. You push out a lot of cheap capital, and then a lot of crazy things happen. Now the capital has gotten expensive. They don't make economic sense.
Yeah.
So you have all these real estate operations that have to roll over their debt, mm-hmm. and they can't because their income is down, their tenancy is down, and yeah. now the debt is much more expensive. Yeah. And so the question is, how is that, you know, it's like a tsunami hitting a wall. How is that going to sort out?
I guess the question is, like, to how much, a large degree of that is the result of the COVID phenomenon where people started working at home.
Right.
And it's harder and harder for companies to ask people to come in and justify them. To how much of that is a long-term strategy to, like you always say, that, you know, disaster capitalism, or, but it doesn't have to be disaster. It can be engineered.
Right.
And you're just engineering a fire sale.
Right.
Where all those funds have to sell at a point in time, the price goes down, and then you.
I was shocked, you know, because I looked at the numbers that the small business is failing. But the last time I was in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. I drove down through Paoli, mm-hmm. through the sort of main road. And I was stunned because I'm used to Paoli always looking so prosperous.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very yes. wealthy place. Mm-hmm. And yet the main drag, all the little businesses had emptied out. There were so many empty storefronts and it looked ragged.
Yeah.
I was shocked.
I don't know the exact answer for that, but you're right. A lot of them, like businesses, a seafood business that's been there for generations, these type of things that are empty now.
Right.
And I don't know if it's because the rent went up or because, to me, I kind of feel like the rent went up. Like, to me, a lot of the times when you see, even in Philadelphia, when you see these older buildings that stay, that are sustainable, it's because the person owns it.
They own the
building. They own it. They're not renting it.
Right. They bought the building.
Yeah.
Okay. Precious metals. I was just looking at the charts. And, you know, and this is me personally, not everybody. Yeah. If people have a knack for real estate and like taking care of it, fine. But I love precious metals because it doesn't require maintenance.
Yes.
Or much.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I was looking at the charts this morning and it's clearly at an inflection point. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to tell whether the deflationary forces will take it down or, you know, or it could keep going up.
Yeah.
I can't tell.
I think that that both real estate and precious metals, I talk to different people and they say, I know that real estate is going up. I know that gold is going to $50,000 an ounce. And I would just say,
they know that.
I don't know. I said, can we allow for the fact that maybe it'll go the other way? And let's just take a little bit more of a disciplined approach. Don't go wholesale into precious metals, right. wholesale into real estate. Be thoughtful about it and do it over time. And you're right. You're in an inflection point. It's not easy to see what's going to happen.
Right. If it continues, you know, if the trend up continues, then it will be a great buying time. Mm-hmm. So,
but there's been times where precious metals have gone down with the stock market. It's not always a one for one. It's not a perfect hedge. It doesn't exactly offset.
Right. Well, the other thing is, I mean, to me, if you look at the instability globally, gold should be going up. Mm-hmm. But you have tremendous pressure. You know, you've just got too much leverage and too many people have to sell for practical reasons. So, and I think I think the central banks would love to pick up more. So there's no mm-hmm. encouragement of, anyway, so precious metals is an inflection point and the, you know, sort of a question mark. Mm-hmm. Now I love silver. So if silver's getting clocked, I'm a buyer.
Yeah.
So I just keep, but I'm, you know, I'm like a turtle buyer. Mm-hmm.
That's the way to do it, though. Yeah, turtle buyer over time.
Yeah, absolutely. I had one subscriber who had a great relationship with the pawn shop.
Okay.
Who were totally honest, clean as whistle. Whenever they got a good coin in, they'd call her, and she would get premiums to melt value that was the best I've ever seen. But she just had this, and she just
knew that right person. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But she was patient.
Yes.
She was patient.
Yeah.
She was, and over many years. Mm-hmm. Okay. Securities. Now, securities is the trickiest area. So we're going to spend some time on it.
Yeah.
The first question we get is, BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard are evil, and we need to to move. And I'm one of those people. If I have real integrity issues with someone, I just avoid them.
Yeah.
And so I do have real integrity issues with BlackRock.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that makes me most nervous for subscribers or anybody is sloppy or poor custodian.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I do is I trust those three firms to do a competent job at custodian.
Yeah.
Right. So.
And custodian has been being consolidated.
Right.
They're consolidating. There's fewer available.
Right. If you're going to do securities, there's no way to do securities without playing with the big companies.
Yeah.
They're the only ones who can do
and the ones that are typically mentioned as the big ones, like Fidelity, Schwab, Vanguard, BlackRock. I don't know about BlackRock, but they're ones that you, in today's world, you can interact with directly.
Right.
As an individual.
Right.
Like when you have, if you have here in Philly, we have PNC, you could have investments at PNC, and PNC in that case is the custodian.
Right.
Or you could have a variable annuity with Transamerica. In that case, it's investing in stocks within an insurance policy, which I wouldn't suggest, but the custodian is Transamerica.
Right.
So there are other custodians around. It's just whoever ultimately is responsible to hold on to your money.
Right. And I think, and that's true with precious metals too.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be exceptionally careful that your custodian is competent.
Yeah.
And sometimes that will lead me towards the big firms when I don't like being with the big firms, but I trust them to be confident.
Yeah.
The danger is that if the government decides to pull a fast one, it's all in one place.
Yeah.
Or in a few places, mm-hmm. and it's easier to pull a fast one.
Yeah.
That's what I don't like about it. And one of the things I'm going to be down in Tennessee is I'm going to say to the state legislators, is it possible for Tennessee to issue bonds where Tennessee is the custodian? You have a record
between like the Treasury Direct program.
Like, yeah, can
TennesseeDirect.com and
I think
be the issuer.
Right. And the custodian. So I don't have to put my bonds in Schwab. I could go direct to Tennessee. Do you know of anything like that?
I know Treasury Direct,
right,
which is the federal government. If they can do it, why can't you do it under a state
jurisdiction? Okay, well, I'm going to work on that one. Because, there are municipalities in the United States that I would trust.
Yeah.
Certainly a lot more than the federal
government. If you look at when you buy a CD at your bank, the bank is the custodian of that money.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So there's all kinds of examples of
it. Right. So, I am nervous. I just read a very interesting article in the Financial Times. Goldman Sachs apparently recently did a study that said half of the S&P is not in a profit mode. They're losing money.
Okay.
But yet if you buy an index fund, you're going to get, you're buying 50% of the companies you're buying through an index fund are losing money.
But in the index are those big ones that are Google, Facebook, et cetera, that carry it, and then it shows a positive.
So the S&P today for the year was up 13%,
mm-hmm.
and it's all being carried by what I call the companies building the control grid.
Yes.
I want nothing to do with
it. Yeah.
So half of them are losing money, and the other half are destroying my world. And it's like...
And it's a challenge, because why own stock? The only reason I suggest people own stock is you need that growth to help you reach your goals.
Right.
So if you're going to say, so you have to accept that there's not a perfect solution. It could be that you decide to own stocks and you say, however you want to do it, you say, I'm not going to own Facebook and the people building the control grid. But then accept that the return might not be what you're expecting.
Right. Although traditionally value stocks did better than momentum.
True, stores. Yes.
But you have to live through periods that are as ugly as this one.
You know,
and it's not, you know, my attitude is if I buy and hold a company that has real endurance is giving me a dividend, mm-hmm. then when it's down, I don't care. I'm getting the dividend, you know.
But that's your philosophy. There's a famous right. person that said the most important thing about an investment philosophy is that you have one. Because you have to have a guidepost
right.
to come back well, to.
But I'll never forget getting a client who had her family had a money manager who'd done her parents mm-hmm. and was doing her.
Yeah.
And I looked at her portfolio and it was all value stocks mm-hmm. that had been bought decades ago.
Yeah.
That had a big dividend
mm-hmm.
and she was getting a glorious cash flow
mm-hmm.
and you didn't want to necessarily sell them because the cost basis was yes. so low.
Yeah.
But her family had played that game, mm-hmm. value stocks with dividends, and you're patient and you get this glorious cash flow. So if you look at her returns
yeah.
on her original investment, it was fabulous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she was like, I hate my money manager. And I was like, why
do you yeah.
hate your money?
Yes.
You should give him a prize.
Yeah.
You know what?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's underneath what like Warren Buffett's philosophy is. Yes, he has inside information, different things, but right. underneath all that, he's a value investor.
He's a value investor. The other thing is because I really decided, okay, I'm going to figure out, you know, how his operation works
mm-hmm.
and put aside the criminality for a
yeah.
second,
yeah.
which you can't put aside, but
yes.
for purpose.
Yeah.
If you look at his effort to study investment and really figure it out,
mm-hmm.
it's excellent.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy really
mm-hmm.
did his homework. He worked hard and he figured it out.
Yeah.
And he is very, very capable. He knows what he's doing,
mm-hmm.
which is why the criminals have embraced him and has.
Yeah, that would make sense. You want somebody who's good at what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. He's anyway, sometime we'll, you know, I've written a few pieces on the real deal on Warren Buffett. But
okay.
subscriber only.
So. Yeah.
Anyway, stocks. So this article in the Financial Times is basically saying it was having a debate with the person they're interviewing, was saying now is, you know, Fidelity's real big on saying now's the time for active investment, not passive.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you look at what you're buying in an index fund, that's not what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You want to not get the ones that are losing money, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so it was an interesting debate about whether you want it to be active or passive and whether this environment would lead to active investment or not.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I mean, I think the active, there's a lot of studies I've looked at over time that active fails over a long period of time
right.
relative to the index. That's why the evidence, that's why all these people say, listen to Jack Bogle and do the index.
Right.
But then the challenge is that the index has these stocks that I don't like.
Right.
And it comes down to there are solutions, but there's different solutions for different people, depending on your income level.
Right.
But broadly speaking, you can go from the top down or the bottom up.
Right.
So if you say there's 500 stocks, is there a way for me to take out the five I don't like and keep the rest? Or because once you get right. past those five, you have to be able
there
to say, I don't like this one. I do like this one. I don't like this one.
There was a brokerage firm that did that, and then they went out of business.
Yeah.
It didn't work.
At a high wealth level, it's called a separately managed account.
Right.
And then you basically, instead of owning a fund, you own the actual 500 stocks, and you can say, get out, take out Google and take out
right.
JP Morgan.
Right.
And the other way to do it is bottom up. So then you say, well, I'm going to start with zero, and I'm going to just choose things that I can verify are good.
Right.
So that's two kind of high level ways to approach that
question. Right. Well, I think it comes back to, so there's a new book that's rocketing around the internet by a friend of mine called, his name is David Webb. And he was a hedge fund manager, very successful from Ohio. And he just got, during the financial crisis, he said, that's it, I'm out of here. And he moved to Sweden
okay.
because he studied the custodian integrity of different countries and different systems and concluded Sweden was the place where mm-hmm. if he bought a sovereign Swedish bond, it really, he owned it.
Yeah.
And then he watched as the custodian relations and laws and practices in Sweden, you know, evolved to where ours are. And he got very concerned that the regulatory structure globally has set up a way where they can literally do bail-ins with securities and grab all the securities. And if you look at the legal precedents that occurred during the financial crisis, he's extrapolating those legal settlements to what they could do for literally 100% of the global securities. Part of it being everything's aggregated into Vanguard, you know, into a few big guys.
Yeah, there's a core principle. I'll have to read that. I haven't read it. But for me, custodians, there's a core principle of, and it goes back to being supported by the regulatory structure and the laws of customer money, what's called segregation.
Right.
So, for example, the three examples, Bernie Madoff had no customer segregation. It was just, here's the statement from Bernie. MF Global is another one. And right. That was a violation of customer segregation. So they had trading accounts and they lost money and they took customer money, but it's supposed to be separate, and put it over here.
Right.
And then more recently, even things like FTX,
right.
Sam Bankman-Fried is using, they made public statements. They don't have the same regulatory structure because it's crypto and it's all this stuff. But at the core of it, they started using customer money.
Right.
And that's the dividing line when things really go south in a big way.
Right. So is the securities yours, or is, you know, is it the secured creditor of the larger entities?
Right.
So I'd be very, if you read The Great Taking, I'll send you the link. If you read it, I'd love to talk to you about it. Because David makes some leaps on the legal applications that So I'm having John Titus read it too.
Yeah.
Because now it's funny, David is convinced that other people, you know, his message, what he's trying to do with this book is say to people who think they're protected from the corruption that's underway, he's saying, you're not. The wealthy will not be protected.
But then my question back to him would be, that's fine if I accept all your premise. What is my action item then?
So he would say, your action item is to build a resilient homestead.
Okay.
And to, you know, to provide for local food.
Mm-hmm.
And do as much as possible to lower your financial expenses.
Okay.
So that whether it's food, energy, water, you're building your own resilient community and infrastructure. And he would say, have no debt, own your land outright. It's interesting, the Tennessee legislators just passed a law saying that you can pay your property taxes forward.
Really?
Yeah. So
you how far in advance?
So I'm trying to test that because I keep trying to pay it. And the my county office says, we're not ready.
There's a huge implication there with present value and inflation.
Yeah.
If you can pay in present dollars.
Right.
That's a huge implication.
Yeah. So one of the reasons I bought or built the homestead I built was I bought three properties in Hickory Valley, Tennessee, and my combined city and county property taxes for all three were $500.
Yeah.
So I figured
pay that triple for the next 10, 25, 50 years today. And then you don't have any property tax bills for the next 50 years.
Right. So he's basically saying as much as you can demonetize your income statement.
Okay.
Do that.
And that makes sense.
You know, when I say that you appreciate the benefits of sort of taking care of local. Mm-hmm. Well, let me go to the next one, because the next local investment we had. So I continue. Well, I should just say I continue to buy. I'm on a savings plan. I keep putting money in the stock market every month. And, you know, so I'm a silver buyer and I'm a stock market buyer. But part of it is I absolutely believe that the thing that makes the world go round are great companies and enterprise. I'm an enterprise investor. I love enterprise. To me, precious metal sits in a vault, does nothing.
Yeah.
It does not excite me.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a couple of companies that are like my favorite companies. Every time they go down, I was like, stale.
Yeah.
Right. So to me, I don't see a future without equity, liquid equity, and people investing in enterprises.
Yeah. I would say to me, the first thing that comes to mind for most people is do business with the local people before you could be educated to whether to invest in a local business. You should be a customer of that business, and you should appreciate the value proposition that they provide and understand why they make money.
Right.
And then that can inform your opinion about whether you might want to invest, and then they might not want you to invest. You have to ask. But it starts to me with being a customer and understanding at that level the business.
So I was thinking now of liquid stocks, but to go to local, we just had Michael Schumann both on the Salary Report and on Financial Rebellion. And I don't know if you're familiar with Michael's work, but Michael and we were working on local investment back in the 90s, as was Michael. And then we got detracted by dealing with the risk issues of local investment and all investment. And Michael kept plugging away. He's just relentless. He just never gave up. He works hard, you know. And so I've spent a lot of time as I've traveled around America getting to know local businessmen who make a fortune in local investment.
Yeah.
And, you know, people who just wander into it get killed. But the guys who really know the local business and take a lifetime, they make an absolute fortune. And it's the best yields I know of. But you've got to be really good at it. And you've got to be really patient at it. And
sometimes with that, I know around here, it's everywhere, but a lot of private real estate investors are two-person teams. There's an older person,
right,
and then they bring in a younger person and they bring them up. And the real estate sign always has the two people, the older person first, the younger person. Then that guy retires. Now the young person becomes the old person. He brings one guy in. And they're making a killing over time. And it's a long-term proposition.
Right.
And but they're like almost like an apprenticeship there.
Yeah. So the old guy understands all the risks and all the things that could go wrong. And the young guy's got the energy.
Yeah.
And the two are a great combination. Yes. Yeah. It absolutely works. One of my favorite, we did an interview many years ago with a guy on buying a home. And I said, I was the former FHA commissioner. I can't not do a good interview on this. So I looked at every book out there, and this guy was a professor. And he taught real estate. And so very serious academic, very serious scholar. He took I think like 100 students, and he had them do surveys of mortgage bankers, real estate brokers, home buyers, everybody. I mean, very in detail studies. And it came up with a book, The 108 Mistakes Everybody Makes Buying a Home.
Okay.
And it was incredible.
Yeah. You know?
And And anyway, he thought of all the things.
That right there is putting that old person's experience into a book. So more than just the junior guy can appreciate it.
Right. Exactly. Okay. So I do think there's a lot of opportunity locally. So we just published Pharma Food. Did you get your copy of Pharma Food?
Yes.
Have you looked at it yet?
Well, I read the PDF.
Okay. So I would say it's pretty frightening.
Yes, it is. It totally is.
Well, I always tell people, look, the reason you want to invest in your local farmer is not because you want to make money, but because you don't want to eat
poison or fake food. Or,
right.
Yeah. That you don't even know the implications. I could tell you it's not going to be good, but I don't know what eating an impossible burger is going to do to my insides. So,
I have to tell you, Elson and I've, you know, Elsa von Hamel did the research and wrote it. You know, we were baffled. We were like, what reality could explain this?
Yeah, to me, there's a hubris involved. It has a lack of humility when I can say I'm going to create fake food, no matter what the justification with, whether it's just because I want to make money, that would be a terrible justification. Even if you have a good intention, you say, well, I want to save the world by making fake food. But there's a hubris. Like, who are you to say that?
Well, but here's the thing. If you look at how much money they're putting into this.
It's intentional.
You're pouring a tsunami of money into something that has almost no chance of working.
Yeah.
Why would somebody do that?
Power. Is the answer power? I don't know.
So, you know, one of the things we speculated on was, you know, because I always say, pretend this is a movie. What's the plot that explains what's happening?
Yeah.
And, you know, the plot that explains what happens is they're expecting a solar minimum. They're expecting agriculture produce to dive. Okay. And they're trying to figure out, okay, well, you know, what do we do?
Yeah, depopulation. So basically, through that.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, who knows? But, yeah. But, I don't know. So I see a lot of opportunity in local investment just so that you have. Personal loans comes into this. Have you ever looked at Prosper?
No.
Prosper is where people, you know, individuals loan to other individuals, and it's only available in certain jurisdictions. It's not available.
Is it in the U.S.?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And
because there are microloan programs that are, a lot of them are international and stuff. but prospers in the U.S.
In the U.S. And it's not micro. I mean, it's
okay. So it's more. It's not just borrowing five.
So yeah. So an individual wants to refinance out their credit card debt, they go to Prosper.
Okay.
And, you know, maybe they pay 8 or 12 or whatever. But
okay.
It's
and Prosper serves as the intermediary.
Yeah, and you can build portfolios, taking pieces of different loans.
I'll check it out.
So it's worth. I didn't know if you wanted to mention anything about insurance. I do feel in this environment that, I mean, you saw the family financial disclosure form.
Yeah.
I'm a believer that insurance is a great way to take care of certain risks, but you've got to make sure you've got an insurance company that will be here.
Yes. And understand the coverage that you have and what it does and doesn't cover. And
right.
We talked about on a previous one. Yeah.
We talked about previously, so we don't need to go into it, but this is another area where I think investing time to really make sure you understand what you have and what you haven't.
Yeah.
You know, I told you I took that, you know, I'm constantly getting speeding tickets. Happy to take the state. Actually, the state trooper courses are fabulous.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's asleep in the back and Catherine's in front, like
taking them.
Wow. No, because they work hard. You know, these guys are retired troopers and they work hard.
Yeah.
And the, you know, it's a lot of good information, but they went through all the insurance stuff and the extra insurance you should get. And it was very informative.
That's a good person to listen to.
Right. Digital assets.
Yeah. To me, this the biggest thing I say to people is FedNow, crypto, CBDC, the biggest difference, because right now you have examples of like Joseph Mercola, who was shut off in the existing system,
right,
which is largely digital. That's the reason why they can shut it off. So,
right. And I think they're setting it up so they don't need CBDC. They can shut you off with Visa, MasterCard on your bank account.
Even things like the selling, like one of the things they advertise on FedNow is instant money.
Right.
ACH, which is the bank, you know, you bill pay basically in your bank account. At this point now is the next day. As long as the receiving bank doesn't hold on to it intentionally, it's next day.
Right.
So how much more instant do you need?
Do you, we made a collection of CBDC shorts. So we took 70 short videos, like 1 minute and less, or 2.5 minutes and less, and put them up to sort of help people understand what this sort of push for central control is. And the first one, of course, is Karsten's, you know,
Karsten's
video. But the next one is Neil Kashkari. Have you seen it?
I don't know if I have. I probably have, but I just don't know.
So Neil Kashkari is the president of the Minneapolis Fed.
Okay. Yes.
And Neil Kashkari was the guy who shuttled that trillions to the Wall Street during you know, so I would say his establishment credentials are pretty impeccable that he would, you know, when you give $27 trillion to Wall Street, you can be very popular.
Yeah.
So anyway, so this is Neil Kashkari. This is not Catherine Austin Fitzgerald. Come on. So he's giving a speech at Columbia University. He says, look, I can send money to anybody around the world with Venmo. And you know, what do I need CBDCs for?
Right.
What do I need them for?
That is right.
The only reason I need them is like if the Chinese, I can do complete surveillance and do social credit. So
it's totally correct.
It's totally
he felt like telling the truth that day when he was talking.
Yeah. So he said, I can see why I can see why China wants CBDC, but why would America let this happen? That's a Fed president. It's a president of a Fed bank telling you that you don't want this. Yeah. And he says, I keep asking people, why do we want this? Why would it help? And he said, I get all this hand waving and maybe it's good for inclusion. And then he says, really? Is there any evidence? Because I'll tell you what, the inclusion, come to the Hickory Valley Post Office and everybody's lining up buying money orders.
Okay.
Yeah. The reason they don't have a bank account is because they don't want it.
Yes.
They don't want it.
Yes.
Because they're smart.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All those people lining up for money orders, they're smart.
Yeah.
Anyways. Okay, so digital assets. Titus said to me once on Money and Market, give me one good reason to own Bitcoin. I said, so I can walk a lot of money across the border with no questions asked.
Yeah.
I said, okay.
Yeah.
That's one good reason.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, I love the idea of private currencies and I love the idea of community currencies. Mm-hmm. So I'm all in on private currencies.
Yeah.
But if you're doing private currencies, you need to know that you're playing on your enemy's platform and they can assert total control anytime they want.
Yeah. But to me, it's part of, it's like the the gradient of evil. Like, so certainly don't play on the enemy's platform.
Right.
So Tim, is the current platform digital? Yeah. Yes, it is. It's just not, don't voluntarily play on the other team's platform. It doesn't mean you don't have concerns that we can talk about.
Right. Well, here's the thing. If I play, you know, if I play in one of the big custodians, I'll leave BlackRock out, but mm-hmm. some of the others.
Yeah.
You know, at least I know they're competent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now I do think if the SEC approves serious ETFs and I can go to Fidelity and buy Bitcoin through an ETF in a securities form, the money that pours in is going to be unbelievable.
The price will go way up.
Yeah. So I think the chances of another big pump and dump on Bitcoin and crypto mm-hmm. is, you know, reasonable. So,
but even then, like, to me, it's, well, at least they're going to choose one of them and pump it. What about the different other cryptocurrencies that are not Bitcoin?
You know, my guess is if they do another big pump of Bitcoin, some will drag along.
Yeah.
But, you know, my fear, and this has happened to me twice now, where I beg everybody, please, if there's a pump and you're swapping, mm-hmm. please put aside the money you need to pay your taxes.
Yes.
Do not get pumped and dumped. Mm-hmm. You know, do not create a taxable gain at a high and not fund it with dollars. And then, you know, you end up with your position less than the taxes you owe.
And you end up upside down and not being able to pay the tax bill.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And I've seen that happen twice.
I've seen it. Yes.
The other thing is, if you look at the regulation, so Australia really put crypto into a lockdown about a year ago. And if you look at the regulation they came up with, if you were a CPA, you would immediately throw anybody out who was trading crypto because it was a nightmare.
Yeah.
It was a compliance nightmare. Okay. Before we move out of asset classes, any other thoughts?
No, I think going back to the beginning, which is, there's no way, and just figure out how to navigate with these things. And there is a way to navigate. So just take responsibility for yourself, take regular basic actions you can take in these different areas, and you can still.
Well, I look at it as a war strategy, which is I have assets spread across the battlefield and I'm going to lose some.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping, you know, the goal is my assets get me and my loved ones across the field and we.
Right.
You know, it's
on to the next day, the next situation, right. The next generation.
I do want to mention the mistakes I see happening are people getting scared and then being persuaded to get out of where they are mm-hmm. and get into something worse. So the big one, the common one we've talked about before is scaring you out of your securities, which are in your IRA or 401k, and trying to talk you into an IRA of precious metals. Mm-hmm. That is done with a dealer who prices you at 100% or more of market.
Yeah.
And then you've basically taken your assets and turned them into 50% mm-hmm. overnight.
Yeah. But it started, you have to recognize that you're living in fear. I think sometimes when people are in fear, they're reacting. So the first step is just to realize I'm doing this out of fear.
Right. If you fear and money don't work well together. Yeah. So if you're in fear, you got to get out of fear.
Yeah. And go for a walk.
Right.
Spend time with a loved one.
And anytime I see somebody moving money out of fear, where they go is worse than where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, because they go from a good custodian to something I don't love, but it's not foolish, into something that cuts their money in half.
Yes.
Okay. So please, you know, I just say one thing. If you're looking to invest in precious metals, you have to go to a competent dealer.
Mm-hmm.
It's an unregulated market, so you have to get a competent dealer, and you should price out what you're doing with several dealers.
Yeah,
because prices swing around, and you need to understand the premium you're paying over melt. And if you're paying an above market premium over melt, don't do it.
Mm.
So. And we have a gold silver calculator that has a list of sort of the common bullion coins, et cetera, that you can use to sort of understand what melt value is in any time.
But you will pay a premium. That's why you have to talk about different people and understand what is a normal premium versus an outside premium.
Right. The only way I could find out what the premium is to call multiple dealers and just, you know, talk to them and get prices.
Yeah.
But and one of the things that frustrates me is there a lot of times we'll see a good article on the internet in the new media that we want to post to, and we can't post because they're promoting one of these IRAs at the bottom. And it's we didn't say anything about IRAs and 401ks, but for America, you know, there's a lot of nervousness about having the government in your business. And you know, the only thing I can say is I'm not a great believer in paying big fees to get out of them or losing a lot of money to get out. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't keep an eye on.
Yes, just be thoughtful. Don't make giant fear-based moves. And understand, you're really never out. You may be out of a set of rules that govern 401k and IRA. But even if you put all the money in a brokerage account, you're still subject to tax rules.
Right.
It's, you just have a different framework there. You're not quite as subject to as many rules.
Right. So do you have many clients who convert to Roth?
That's a main strategy because you're recognizing income when you're in a low income year for whatever reason. Sometimes people retire early at 55. They don't have to take Social Security till later, or RMDs coming out of required minimum distributions out of IRAs till later. And you fill up that middle part with Roth conversions up to whatever tax bracket you agree with.
Right. So I love the idea of making sure that if there's a benefit to converting, you do.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Because that gives you much more flexibility.
It does. Yeah. And in the Roth, and the Roth, as long as they don't welch on the promise, then it's never going to be taxed again.
That's a big if.
Yes.
I told you I'm never going back in. I don't want to worry about it. Because fool me once, shame on you.
There was the big, who was it? Was it Peter Thiel or somebody that had like a $4 billion Roth?
Did he really?
Because he put the, the PayPal, was it PayPal that he started with?
Yeah.
And put that founder stock in and it grew.
Right.
And then there was some initiative to crack down on mega Roths, but then it kind of fell. I don't know where it stands right now.
Oh, I'll look into that. That's interesting. Yeah. Okay, so let's turn to the big macro issues, because one of the things that's putting people in fear is, you know, you sort of see this big macro issue when it comes down. So deflation and inflation. The unnerving thing about if I'm responsible for my family finances, I have to be prepared to deal with both of them, including both of them at the same time.
Yeah.
Because I could go into a period where my income's deflating, but my expenses are still inflating and I'm getting stuck in a squeeze.
Mm-hmm.
And if we look through history, the Fed pumps, it's a monetary inflation. They clearly caused it. Everybody knows.
Yes.
And it's baked into the cake. Of course, the people who got the largesse in the pandemic are protected.
They're the insiders.
Right. Yeah. The insiders are protected. And now the outsiders are struggling.
Mm-hmm.
So especially if their businesses were closed down or other things.
Yeah.
So so we have to be prepared for how can I say this? We have to be prepared for sort of a warlike environment to generate income.
Mm-hmm.
But we have, you know, clearly we're experiencing inflation on our expenses.
Yes. To me, traditionally, the way I would suggest people think about those things, like for inflation, you need things that will grow. So things like stocks can be a benefit, broadly speaking, in inflation. Deflation is when prices are going down. So if you have $100,000 sitting in a bank account and the price of something went down, now you can buy a lot more of it.
Right.
You can think about that in like even the disaster capitalism type scenarios or the fires in Lahaina or different things.
Right.
But bonds and cash now, you can't just say bonds now because longer term bonds.
Okay.
There's so a whole other thing. But
TLT, which is 20-year ETF, is down 50% from its high.
Right. Because bond prices go opposite direction of interest rates, and longer term bonds are affected a lot more than shorter term bonds.
So people who were taught 60-40 or 80-20, they're getting clocked. They're much better off in stocks than they were in bonds.
But part of the reason they're getting clocked is they were in La La Land for 16 years or whatever of low rates.
Right.
And the bond section, when they weren't, if they weren't doing it themselves, it's in the Vanguard Bond Fund, kept moving out in maturity to increase yield.
Right.
And the further you move out in maturity, the bigger the downfall is going to be when rates go up. And so that was the kind of what happened there. Because if you didn't, if you could have just shortened maturity, you could at least be more defensive in bonds. It's not just a one-time
thing. So one of the tensions I had with my clients, I was like, the great bull in bonds is over.
Yeah.
Get real.
Mm-hmm.
So stocks, real estate, precious metals, get real. And get used to the volatility.
Yeah.
Because volatility, you know, it just, that's what real is. Mm-hmm. It's going to be volatile,
yeah.
But it's better than getting slaughtered in bonds. Mm-hmm. And it was a food fight.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't get some of them to, you know, to understand that, that the risk of volatility was easier to work with than the risk of where bonds were going to go.
That's why things like the SVB meltdown was basically the phenomenon. I just do not believe that they don't understand that phenomenon. If you're managing SVB Bank,
you understand that. You
clearly understand it.
Right.
An initial low-level person in finance would understand that. There was other things going on there.
Yes.
But their stated problem there of losing money on their treasuries is the same thing that people experienced in...
Well, here's what I don't... You know, it's a conversation for another day, but I don't know why a lot of the banks didn't hedge.
Yeah, I mean, use interest rate swaps.
It was easy to put on a hedge. And I'm surprised because we all knew where this was going.
I think sometimes they just get complacent or they think they'll have time to react. But it's like the barn door closes and it's too late. It's like a switch and now it's too late. And
so here's the big question. The big question is if you can get 5% or better. So my problem with the bond market is I don't like the credits.
Okay.
I don't like the credits. So there's a lot of credits that offer 5-7% now. I don't like them. Mm-hmm. I'd rather be in something real. So the question is, that's why something like a Tennessee Direct.
I think that's a great, if they could do that, that would be terrific. They would lead the nation.
Yeah.
To prove that you could do that, if they could do Tennessee Direct.
I got to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Because where you can pick your credit like that,
mm-hmm.
then you're talking about, you know.
Yeah.
So I used to have a great bond guy. He'd mm-hmm. been a state treasurer. He'd been the deputy treasurer.
Okay.
And, you know, I could call him and we could build a portfolio of individual bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And that was great because then we could lock up the yields in credit that was okay.
Mm-hmm.
And
I mean, the easy thing to do is publicly said all the time by many people, including Ed Dowd. They say roll T-bills.
Right.
Because right now the short-term rates are higher than the longer-term rates.
Yeah, but I'm not financing the U.S.
But then that's the challenge, yes.
I don't trust them. Okay. Obviously, the dollar, you know, the role of the dollar is the reserve currency. If you look at the subsidy flowing to every person in the dollar system
mm-hmm.
from that advantage is still enormous.
Mm-hmm.
And if tomorrow it ended and we had to do this on based on fundamental productivity, you know, the inflation would be, unimaginable.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, right now, if you're looking at inflation of anywhere, depending on whose numbers you trust, from 8-15%, you know, there is some kind of gradual nature to it.
Yeah.
You know, a real meltdown in the dollar would be, the inflation would be astonishing.
And you would experience it in real life more than you are.
Right. Well, I think people have been struggling with real inflation for a long time now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the Chatwood Index and all that.
Right. Energy. You know, so part of the squeeze is cheap capital is over, but it's higher energy.
Mm.
Now, if you look at my personal finances, the biggest sort of investment of the last year was helping out people who got, you know, who didn't adjust to the inflation
mm-hmm.
and they got surprised.
Yeah.
And they're having trouble handling it. How do you get people to understand this is happening? And they've basically got to take a look at their budget and say, okay, just pretend everything went up 15%.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
What's your plan?
Yeah. The first thing is to have a spending plan. Right. Because if you don't have a reference point, you don't really know the effect on you personally. You could say, okay, I could read the Chapman Index and said it went up this, or the government said it went up this. But do a point in time, have your spending plan, have your budgets, you know, so to speak, and then check in on it.
Right.
And then say, okay, here, if that goes up 15%, you know, I work with people, we do a longer term plan and say, what is the implications of that in the longer term plan?
Okay. So one is interest. Now, you know, in the Solidarity Network, most people trying to keep their debt down or get out of debt.
Yeah.
So interest, they've been remarkably protected from the interest rates. Problem is, if they're selling a house and then buying a new one, you know, then they get hammered. Energy, you know, they're pretty good about energy efficiency. And if they don't, they should listen to Charlie.
Yes. that graph he showed of which are the most efficient sources.
Wasn't that interesting?
It was very interesting.
I did not realize that our energy return on investment on fossil fuels in the U.S. was so much lower.
Mm-hmm.
Than the Saudis and the Russians.
But on a relative basis right now, I believe he said in the U.S. and just overall, natural gas is more efficient than oil.
Yeah, well, we've been a huge bet on the last 20 years on natural gas.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons, if you look at the sort of climate change compliance, the U.S. looks good.
Yeah.
Is because they're using natural gas to make the argument that they're...
I had a state rep at a public meeting for an office, for a condo that they were going to build, come to the town meeting and ask the town to not allow natural gas into the building.
Why?
Because of climate change. You need to force everyone to use electric everything.
That's control.
Now, to me, the township legally doesn't have the ability to do that.
Right.
And their lawyer, I think, said that. But just the fact that lady's coming to a meeting and saying that as an elected representative at a low level.
And it's just not true.
Yeah.
It's just not true. But if you want everybody on the control grid, you want them on electricity, because then you can turn them on and off.
Yeah.
Okay. So one is the interest rates. One is the increased cost of energy. The biggest one, mm-hmm. the biggest expense, and it's invisible to people, is what I call the great poisoning.
Yeah.
It is eating them alive. Some of it is, you know, people getting food poisoning with the food.
Mm-hmm.
So some of it is, you know, sort of bad health from a combination. But the vaccine injury is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's not clearly identified. And if you just look at the, you know, the different studies that show what's happening, or the rise in all-cause mortality, it's devastating. And what I have, when I interact with different members of our team or subscribers, what I'm hearing is that their time is constantly getting hiccuped by two things. People getting sick or dying.
Mm-hmm.
It's number one. But there is a deterioration in mental acuity and functionality.
Mm-hmm.
Traffic accidents.
Okay, yeah.
Now, it's impossible to prove, you know, what is really causing that. You know, is it because they're in a trance from their smartphone? Is it mm-hmm. because they're vaccine injured? Is it because of, you know, it could be.
Yeah.
But there is a deterioration and it's causing them to lose massive amounts of time and money.
Yeah, I think the first response for most people when you talk about vaccine injury is to think about your own family. But when you get to like a traffic accident, now you're thinking about somebody out there in the world that could affect you.
Right.
Or you think about a local business you go to and it's not open. You're like, why is it not open? Oh, the person died or they had a health issue. They're not doing business anymore. Those are things that are starting to affect, even if your own family doesn't have it, you're navigating a world where it's affecting many aspects of society.
Right. And it's creating loss of income and it's creating inflation on time demands.
Mm-hmm.
And it's creating increased expenses.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and what's funny, Tim, is I sat down with one colleague and we did a chart and we made, you know, we estimated how many days he and his wife had lost.
Okay.
So we said, okay, you know, your wife has 7 days, you mm-hmm. have 7 days. And we estimated how much time did you lose to the grape poisoning?
Mm-hmm.
How much time did you lose to inflation?
Okay.
How much time did you use to shadow?
Mm-hmm.
So the shadow work was, I buy a new piece of home equipment. It turns out it was faulty.
Yeah.
The repairman has to come. He comes, he's late.
Mm-hmm.
Then he brings he doesn't have the right part. He has to go back. We have to do it again another day. I have to stay home and work. Anyway, so it was basically one home equipment problem. It was a food poisoning under the grape poisoning, and then it was inflation. Mm-hmm. And we figured out of 14 days, seven for him, seven for his wife, he had lost 4 days.
4 whole days. 24 hours, David.
4 whole days.
Or 12 hours.
No, 12 hours. Okay. So 12, but 36 hours. I mean, that's huge. And you know, and he and his wife are just being positive and productive and thinking, oh, well, it's just this week or that.
Yeah.
You know, but then it happened the next week. It was a different story, different things. But it just keeps happening. And I think what I'm seeing is a population that's trying to keep it going and not realizing, wait a minute, something is happening and it's stealing our time and money.
Yeah.
And we need a new strategy. Mm. And one of the breakthrough interviews of the last quarter on the Salaire Report, I did an interview with Toby Rogers, who I've always wanted to interview. And he's a wonderful guy. I don't know if you listened to it.
I did. I'm trying to remember. What was the topic of that?
So he was the guy. He got his PhD in political economy. And he estimated the cost of autism for the next.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
But then he wrote a Substack, which is what inspired me to get him on. He said, you know, we need a new economic model for an economy where the people are being poisoned. Mm-hmm. And I thought, ding, ding, ding. Okay, we need to talk about that.
Yeah.
So I just think everybody here needs to think about, okay, in an environment where the population is under so much more stress, how are you going to navigate? How are you going to run your business? How are you going to run your personal life? Everybody's different.
Yeah.
But this is draining everybody I know.
It is.
Right. Mm-hmm. And how do we help people understand that it's a phenomena? It's not, you know, we're in a war zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is managing in a war zone. How do we help them understand how to deal with this?
I think just to me, it's kind of like if you have ever had chronic illness and then you get better and you're like, wow, I can't believe how bad I used to feel.
Right.
Like if just to get people to realize, like, you don't have to be on the, you know, on the rat race all the time. If you are, take a look and say, you know, do I really need to be doing this? And just by looking at it is the beginning of starting to understand this. And then you could say, well, look, how valuable is my time? What are the activities I'm engaged in, my family's engaged in, and let's find things to stop doing.
Right. So I call it, what did we call it? I don't know. It was a deletion plan.
Yeah.
You know, make a list of everything you're doing and then give me a list of things we can delete. Yeah. What I proposed when I was in government was, the anti-plan? And I said, I want you to make a list of all the things you're required to do. And then a list of things you think are not worth doing, you know, or we can do different or better.
Yeah.
And what I want to do is write you a jumbo waiver that says you don't have to do anything. And it was so successful within the operation. I took it to the secretary's office and said, this is when I was a financial advisor.
Yeah.
We could get all the field offices to write an anti-plan, and then we could do a jumper waiver and excuse them from having to do all these things. And the guy I took it to, who was a deputy, he was a former mayor of a big city, and he was a great guy.
Yeah.
He was fat. I love this guy. And he said, we can't do this. And I said, why? He said, it's too boring. It won't get political.
That's an interesting.
It won't get a good headline. It won't, you know, we'll spend political capital to do it, and it won't. You know, it won't be, it's not sexy enough.
Yeah. Wow.
That was not the best line. The best line was when Kim said, how do we build, you know, how do we fix this problem? And I said, Jack, what you have to do is you have to raise each child correctly for 20 years. Well,
yeah.
Turn them into a productive human being. Okay. And he looked at me and said, that takes too long. I need something fast.
Unbelievable.
I don't think there is.
Yeah.
Okay. We already talked about custodian risk and the grade taking, AI and new technology. You know, we're the third quarter wrap up is going to be, the theme is Whitney Webb is writing a piece on AI. And we've been playing with it to try and understand how we could use it productively. And we found some minor productive uses, but you know, we're all being terrorized on how AI is going to
Yeah. And I think more and more people notice when they're being impacted, but not everybody does. Like, people use it to write articles, to write the news, or to write blogs. They use AI to do it. It's, and some of it, I think, is just when you become aware of it, it's shocking how many aspects of your life are even currently impacted by AI, right? And it's something we all have to learn to deal with in one form or another if we're living on the earth. So I'd be love to see the positive uses of it, because I could think of a lot of negative uses.
So here was the positive use. We were working on the subtitle for Pharmafood.
Okay.
And we just kept going round and round and round. And, you know, we had people with very different points of view trying to. And so one of my partners put it into OpenAI, whatever the open source is. And it spat out like 60 ideas, and it completely opened up the conversation, you know? It was kind of like injected a whole new level of creativity that we could use to work with. So it was very,
I guess the biggest question I have is to what degree will AI be censored? Because AI, in that sense, to me, the biggest benefit is it's harnessing all the ideas all across the internet, you know? And to me, that's the biggest benefit of the internet.
Right.
The problem with the internet is all the censorship.
Right.
Now, you can't have unbridled freedom. You can't have unbridled because of the, you don't want murder and other things on the internet. But there's a positive and a negative. And to that extent, I think that's the key, is that the ability of it to synthesize across a wide series of data and find commonalities. That I could see how that could be a positive if it wasn't going to be manipulated and things, which.
So if you look at who's controlling it and who's managing it, I just think you got the worst evil doers in the world who are going to use it as a tool, and they're going to hide behind it. It was like, oh, well, AI just said. Yeah. mommy, the AI. Okay, so the reality is, so we've gone through the asset classes, we've gone through some of the big macro issues, including there is no way.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is, this all comes down to me, and you know, our point of view is you have to have the attitude of a wealth builder.
Mm-hmm.
So our world has been taken over by wealth stealers and wealth destroyers.
Yes.
But the solution is 8 billion people grow up and start being wealth builders, mm-hmm. you know, because there's no... I got criticized resoundingly. I don't know if you know this, for saying I'm promoting greed because I believe in building wealth.
Okay.
And so my retort was, well, you can build poverty, you can build nothing, or you can build wealth, you can build poverty, you can build nothing, which you prefer.
Yeah.
So I'm a great believer in building wealth, mm-hmm. and it's kind of my love. It's my passion. And I got sidetracked by risk issues for too long. But how do you, in this environment, I don't want people to say, okay, well, I'm going to take all this information and I'm going to make sure I survive the war,
mm-hmm.
because that's not the solution. The solution is we build wealth.
Yeah. I think underneath that, you've said it before, is do it in a win-win scenario. The problem with a lot of wealth building that you see is that it's based on taking somebody else's down in order for you to gain.
Right.
And think about wealth in a broad way. So if I hire a local farmer to grow my Thanksgiving turkey, and I'm paying him what sounds like an expensive price for turkey, that is building wealth.
Right.
Because it's building my connection to him. He's providing food for my family. It allows him to keep building his business and provide food for the community.
Right.
And I just think about, well, what's my time worth? What's his worth? What do I... And so I would think about it in a broader way, but to me, at the core of it, I want to try and meet your goal of having a win-win relationship.
Right. Well, there's living equity, there's financial equity, and the two should be positive toward it. In other words, you need to have a positive relationship between living and financial equity. Yeah. And at the same time, I've got to navigate a world, you know, whether I'm doing any of these asset classes, and the market is full of people I can be win-win with, and the market is full of people I can't be win-win with,
mm-hmm.
because they're either not competent, or they're not ethical, or they're not lawful, or, you know.
And dealing with somebody who's not win-win, it's just draining.
Right.
So even if you don't totally understand, if you're being drained by dealing with somebody, stop dealing.
Right. Well, I always tell people, you know, make a list of everything that's draining you. Now start deleting it from your life.
Yeah.
It's part of the anti-plan.
Yeah. I like that. The anti-plan.
delete. And some people, you know, it takes time to work them out of your life.
Mm-hmm.
But do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Any other thoughts about, you know, I just have to say this again, given what's going on in the politics, you know, I don't care if it's a low interest rate. I just think there's an advantage to paying down your debt
mm-hmm.
and not having debt.
Yeah. It's one less
right.
potential threat or things.
Yeah. Right.
You do have to look at your individual situation, but yes, broadly speaking, sure.
Yes. Okay, well, the next, you know, Pharma Foods out, but this is the proof I was reading on the plane coming over, but the future of financial freedom.
I love it.
And
I love the title, and I look forward to
so I don't know if you know this. This is the Lydia Lion. Do you know what the Lydia Lion
no.
is? It's the oldest known coin in existence.
Really?
Yeah, it's a British museum.
It's from Britain?
Lydia.
What culture is it from?
And so Lydia was part of Turkey and Persia.
Okay.
Long ago.
Okay.
But, you know, both of the main pieces gear are already out as the future of financial transactions.
Okay.
Or financial transaction freedom that the guys in Ken Cieps are writing.
Okay.
And then Richard Werner's wonderful piece about sovereign banks.
Okay.
And I think one of the most exciting things happening in the country today is you have state legislators, state treasurers, state AGs realizing, holy cow,
yeah,
it's really this bad. What are we going to do? And under the Constitution, the powers not delegated by the states to the federal government are reserved for the states.
Yeah.
So the federal powers were created by the states delegating it. So in one sense, under the Constitution, the states are superior,
mm-hmm.
as are the sheriffs. So how can the states take the powers not delegated to the feds and start rebuilding sovereignty?
Yeah.
And, you know, part of the question, what I've said to everybody, wherever I go, we're just in a meeting at the state legislators is, okay, how are you going to transact payments within the state that the Fed and the Treasury can't monkey with or shut down
mm-hmm.
other than by Pony Express?
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
So, well, at this point, given the corruption, you know, pencils and motorcycles and horses is not.
It's not bad. And it worked for a long time.
Right. And it can work again.
Yeah.
I'm always having a fight with one of my partners. He's always saying, you know, we should try this new project management productivity software. And I'm saying, you know, when I was on Wall Street, we had number two pencils on landlines
mm-hmm.
and things were much more productive than they are today.
Yes.
So don't tell me we need more software here. Anyway, okay. Any other thoughts before we go, Tim?
No, it's a pleasure talking with you as we move into the next quarter. Who knows what lies ahead? There's a lot of things going on in the world, but just focus on what you're able to accomplish.
What you control.
What you control. Yeah.
What you control. Now, I have to say, as someone who's an investment advisor, I know your practice at Copper Beach. I see people who put on the hat and say, I'm a wealth builder, and they work very hard and very productively for decades. Things go wrong. They plow through it, and some things go right, some things go wrong, but they build a lot of wealth and it works.
Yeah.
So.
And you can see it over time, different people. Yeah.
Right. You just have to have a.
The mindset, because the mindset is what allows you to get through the ups and downs.
Right.
Because it's not just a straight path up many times.
Right. Right. It's ups and downs.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it can be done. So put Absolutely. On your wealth building hat.
Yes.
And ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for joining us on a Back to Basics Equity Overview. I look forward to the annual.
Absolutely.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, have a wonderful day. And thank you for joining us on the Solera Report.